Yeah, we'll get to that. I have a slide on just that later. We'll talk a little bit about cost. On the low end, there are people who are building these things for $25,000, $40,000 bucks. Al Wick claims he built his plane for about $20,000 to $25,000. You're going to need a high-time engine. You're going to maybe a cheap auto conversion. You're going to need to be good at scrounging. You're going to have a minimum instrument panel, VFR only. You're not going to have some fancy Garmin stack in there. Mid-range might be 40 to mid-70s. You may be able to get some prefab parts, maybe a rebuilt engine, high-end VFR, low-end IFR. I fit into this category. I've got about $68,000 to $70,000 in my plane right now. I've got a low-end IFR panel. I bought a zero-time rebuilt engine that I've actually had to put a couple of grand into to get some work done. But this even includes electric nose gear, a number of prefabricated parts, so that's certainly doable. And then on the high end, of course, there's no top limit. People can go crazy. You can get a bunch of parts prefab. You can buy a brand new Lycoming engine for $25,000 or $30,000. You can get the complete latest Garmin stack or EFIS and end up spending $50,000 there. You got to remember, this is from plans. It's not a kit. You're going to buy the plans from Aircraft Spruce. You're going to pay $500, and then you're going to be able to lay out the money as you go, as you feel like it. You can end up with a full airframe for $15,000 to $20,000, and you got something that looks like an airplane. Everything will be there. Then, of course, the big money comes when you want to do the firewall back and your instrument panel. But you can spend the money as you go. You don't have to lay it out all up front. You can determine what you want to put in the plane and how much you want to spend and how much you want to wait and start putting stuff in later. So, support methods. Nat, I believe, is still taking phone calls. If you've got questions about things in the plan, Nat, you can wave me off if I'm lying. No? Good. So Nat's still taking phone calls. If you've got questions about the plans, you got some issue that you want to talk to him about, give him a yell. You've got the Cozy newsletter archive, so all of the newsletters that Nat published for Cozies are online. You've got the Cozy mailing. Now, for people that are scribbling stuff down, all this stuff, this whole presentation will be online on the website probably Sunday afternoon after I get home. So you don't have to scribble down all these long URLs. It'll all be there under Oshkosh Presentations. You've got the Cozy mailing list, which has about 585 people on it, about 300 builders and 60 to 70 people that are flying Cozies, as well as a number of other Long Easy, Burkut, Velocity, et cetera, builders. You've got builders' web pages. There are links from the unofficial Cozy Builders web page. There are links from Rick Maddie's web pages. There are links from every web page you go to will have links to other builders' web pages. So you can find zillions and zillions of builders that have put web pages up with tips and tricks and their techniques and what they did and what their status is. Excuse me. You've got the Kennard Aviators mailing list, which is a generalized Kennard email mailing list, not just for Cozies, but any Kennard aircraft. And there's probably about 1,500 people on that list. There are hundreds of Kennard flyers on that list, 200, 300, 400 people, maybe more. It's hard to tell. So there's a tremendous wealth of experience and knowledge on the Kennard Aviators list for Kennards in general. There's also still a lot of people that are building Long Easies and Very Easies as well as Cozies, so they get a lot of support there. I know that always amazes Bert when you tell him people are building Long Easies. He looks at you like you're crazy because, the plane's 30 years old, and he's going, why are you building an obsolete aircraft? But it's still better than anything else out there for what it does. You got the CSA newsletter, which is a paper newsletter published by Terry Schubert. If you're building a Cozy or flying a Cozy or building any Kennard, you should be a member of the newsletter. You should get that because it's a paper manifestation of a lot of the discussions that go on the Kennard Aviators list with a lot of other information as well. Terry collects everything and anything that he finds that people send him or that may be of interest to Kennard builders. It's really useful. There's classified ads and stuff in it, so that's a good place to look if you want to buy an aircraft or sell one or sell parts or buy parts. So how many Cozies are there? It's a little hard to tell. We've done some studies by trying to pull numbers out of the FAA database, by looking at how many plans were sold. We believe that there's somewhere in the neighborhood of 2,000 Rutan derivative canard aircraft flying, which includes Very Vigan, Very Easy, Long Easy, Defiant, Berkut, E-Racer. You can read the rest. There's probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 200, 250 flying cozies. And we're talking worldwide here, so again, you pull the numbers out of the FAA database. Some of them aren't really flying yet. Some of them are flying and not flying anymore. If it's in the rest of the world, it's really hard to figure out what's going on. There have been over 1,450 sets of plans sold. I'm not sure. It might be close to 1,500 by now. The plans are still selling at a rate of about 100 a year, which is amazing. You're looking at 15 years of plan sales, and they're still cruising along. People are still buying plans. People are building these things. They're coming out at a rate of 20 to 25 new Cozy Mark IV first flights per year. There's probably 600 to 800 of these that are actually under active construction. So it's a very active community. There's a lot of these airplanes. So as a lot of you who are building found out at the beginning of the year, Brock went bang and shut their doors, and everybody's SOL on finding metal parts. So there was a big scramble, and right now there are two main vendors that have taken over as manufacturers of Cozy Parts, and that's CG Products at the URL listed there, and Jack Wilhelmson's Easy Nose Lift. Now, I do not know off the top of my head who's making what. You're going to have to go to the websites and check out the parts lists to determine who's got what parts. I believe that CG Products is also trying to ensure that they have a supply of Very Easy and Long Easy metal parts as well. So if you happen to be building a Very Easy or a Long Easy, you should talk to them about seeing when those parts are going to come online. Some other part vendors have taken up a little bit of the slack here and there, and we've got listings of both approved, what used to be approved suppliers and not approved suppliers on the website. So a little bit about my building experience. People always ask, well, you know, I don't have a three-car garage or a hangar in my house. You know, where can I build one of these things? And, you know, I built a Quickie Q2 on the mezzanine level of a warehouse. I built a Cozy Mark IV. It started in a small basement, which was about the size, a little bit smaller than one-car garage. So I built every component of the Cozy in the basement. I built the spar, I built both wings with the winglets on it, the fuselage, turtle back, landing gear, had everything canard, everything was built. Couldn't do any of the assembly in there, but all the main pieces were built. It took about 2.5, maybe 3 years. So that's a relatively small space. It might have been 12 by 18. There's a lot of other folks that have similar experiences that built most of the airplane parts in their living room or their dining room or in their basement and cut holes in their dining room floor to get the fuselage out. And those people have angels for wives. A little bit on techniques and tips and tricks. There's a lot of interesting techniques that have been developed over the years that are slightly different than what's in the plans that sometimes make things a little faster, a little easier, a little higher quality, sometimes a little lighter weight. Some people do some vacuum bagging. That's, for my mind, it's a little much work for the weight that you save, but, you know, hey, it certainly doesn't hurt anything, and it certainly does save some weight. There's low vacuum bagging that can also have some of those advantages and be a little easier. You can use peel ply with plastic over it and do a lot of squeegeeing, which is a technique that I used a lot. Use hair dryers to warm up the epoxy while you're doing your layups to assist in getting the epoxy out of the layups. For finishing, there's something that has become known as the Corey Bird method, and I don't know if it's still here, but if any of you have not taken a look at his airplane out there behind the Home Builders Registration building, it's called Symmetry. It's a yellow, looks like a one-place plane, but it's actually a two-place. It's the best-looking plane you will ever see in your life, no matter how long you live. So if it's still there, you got to go over there and take a look. I assume he used his own method on that plane. It involves doing a lot of very thin, squeegee layers of epoxy over the micro to fill pinholes and get a smooth surface. Wayne Hicks has a really good explanation of it on his website. There's also a technique that I didn't use, which was to really lather on the micro really thick when you're doing your finishing rather than doing a bunch of thin layers and trying to let that build up. Frequently asked questions list that's on the web page and other folks' web pages. As I said, there's a whole stack of tips and tricks out there that people have used, come up with themselves for doing little things that can save you a lot of time and just improve the plane a little bit. So I made these slides up when I still lived on the East Coast, but you can see the kind of trips that can be made in this plane. This is one from Fitchburg, Massachusetts to Clearwater down in Florida on a trip down to Sun and Fun. This is an easy one-day trip. We made, in this case, we made a whole bunch of stops because we were visiting people along the way. But this is an easy flight with one stop, say, in Suffolk in Virginia. It's possible if you throttle back and run maybe 8 gallons an hour, you could do it all with nonstop. It's a little longer than I want to sit in the plane, but it's doable, and I know people that have done it. This was the flight to California when I was moving from Massachusetts to California to start working out at Scaled. Started in Fitchburg, flew out to Syracuse to drop my son off at college, flew back to Massachusetts to drop my wife off at a friend's house, flew down to New Jersey to visit my parents, out to St. Louis to visit Kurt Smith, out to Greeley, Colorado to visit Lee Devlin, and then picked up my wife, who flew out there commercially, and flew down through Phoenix and then out to Mojave. Now, this was about 5 or 6 days because I was visiting people along the way, but you could do this in 2 or 3 days if you wanted to easily. Probably if you were insane, you could do it in one. Right as of now, this is the largest airport I've flown into, which is Las Vegas McCarran International. Strangely enough, even though it's a Class B, it's very friendly to general aviation. I have no problem parking up in the northwest corner at Atlantic Aviation. The controllers are really friendly, and it's kind of cool following a 737 or a 757 into land. This is, up until 2 weeks ago, the smallest airport I had landed on, which is Jaffrey, New Hampshire. It's 2,900 feet. It's you can't tell from this view, but it sort of looks like this. And it's uphill, and it's made out of the same stuff the Romans made their cobblestone roads out of. A couple of weeks ago, I landed at Palo Alto Airport, which is 2,443 feet. And had no trouble getting in and stopping in less than two-thirds of the runway. And when we took off, it was just me and my wife and about half fuel, so we weren't near gross. But we were off the ground in 1,300 feet. So, there's a very wide range of airports, and people think you need longer runways in these planes. And you do. It's not an RV. You're not going to get off the ground in 500 feet. And at higher density altitudes, you have to be very cognizant of the runway length. There have been some takeoffs at Durango at 10,000 foot density altitude, where I chewed up 5,000 to 6,000 feet of the runway at gross weight. So you got to think about it. But depending on the situation, you can easily get into some pretty small strips.